We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast Podcast, a football edition of the Wildcast Podcast, the very first one of 2020. And we have a interesting roundtable here. We got Michael Lev, Alec White, Ryan Finley, and of course, I'm Justin Spears. Before we talk some U of A football, make sure you download the Wildcaster app. It's free and available on the App Store and Google Play. Tons of good stuff on there. And also subscribe to the Wildcast Podcast on Apple Podcasts. Hopefully everyone had a fantastic new year. Happy 20 to all of you guys. Lev, you holding up over there? You getting ready for baseball season?
Yeah, things are good. I was actually out at High Corbett Field yesterday. It's always kind of a pleasant shock to the system when you first step out onto the grass at High Corbett. It just,
good smell.
It just feels like, yeah, it's just like spring is coming. Baseball's coming. You know, we all love baseball.
Were you there
around here, especially Arizona baseball?
Were you there at during the sunset time? Because I guess yesterday was like a peak Tucson
sunset. I happened to step outside of my house at that time.
Okay.
And was able to capture a picture of a typically spectacular Tucson sunset. Yeah, right.
Even in January.
Right. You know the downside though about sunsets at High Corbett. You know this? It's like during the winter, it sets directly over the batter's eye, so that like you can't take BP there at sunset.
Well, they now have the Terry Francona Hitting Center.
Well, I think that helps. Around, but there was, you know, when they were preparing to move there, Matt Brown. I don't know. You guys know Matty Brown?
No.
Who works at the U of A? Matt Brown would go there every day at sunset and just stand in the batter's box from the left side and right side and like write down like whether or not he could see a pitch if it was thrown. He did that for like months.
Wow.
Because that was the big concern.
That's dedication.
That is dedication. I'm sorry, Michael. Back to you.
No, that's all right. No. I love these stories about the sunset and the batter's eye and all that. I'm sure that's what everyone tuned in for.
It's like
here on the Wildcast.
It's like a Bill Walton
podcast
tangent
about football, yeah.
Bill Walton tangent.
Not to that degree.
I love the sunsets at High Corbett. but you UA football.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about it in a couple months now. I mean, or I should say a month since the early signing period, but lots has happened since then. The last football podcast we discussed the new hiring of Rhodes as the new defensive coordinator. Paul Rhodes, former Iowa Iowa State head coach, mm-hmm. Was the defensive backs coach for UCLA before joining Arizona, but there was still a position open.
Two.
On Arizona staff. Two positions.
Yep.
One of them, an outside linebackers coach who goes by the name of
Andy Boo. Yep.
I was trying to figure out the pronunciation. I don't know if it's Andy Boo. Boo or Ba.
It's Boo. Yeah.
Okay.
In several of his bios, it says pronounced like Boo, which is sort of easy yet also unfortunate because, you know, you can't really say, are they booing or are they
cheering?
Booing. I mean, they're, you know, either way. Mm-hmm. It can be construed as a negative, but yeah, they hired Andy Boo as their outside linebackers coach. They hired Stan Egan as their defensive line coach. There has been a distinct pattern, I think, to the moves that they've made this offseason. They have gone for experience. They haven't gone after the hot young name or the young guy who can relate to the players. They are going for coaches who have been there and done that, who have a wealth of experience in the game, who have a track record of developing players. And I think that's critical at a school like Arizona. We've talked about this before. I mean, no matter who the head coach is, no matter how nice the facilities are, I mean, they're just not going to recruit at the same level as USC or Oregon, let's say. You're going to get primarily three-star players who need to be coached up. And I think Kevin Sumlin and Dennis Polian, who's the kind of the GM of the football program recognize the need for coaches who can coach players up.
Well, and I think that they came about sort of that knowledge the hard way, right? Just like Rich Rodriguez and really Mike Stoops before him, I think they came in thinking, well, the previous guy just didn't do a good enough job in recruiting. And, you know, they can go get guys that Arizona hadn't been traditionally getting in the past. And maybe some of that is still true. But, I mean, if you're the U of A, what's the best you can hope to finish in recruiting rankings every year? 20th?
In the nation?
In the nation. Yeah, I mean, you at least want to be top half of the Pac-12,
right,
though.
Like, right, but you will probably never finish better than 20th. And you should probably never finish lower than 60th. Right? Fair?
Sure.
Fair? So, you know,
20th might be a little high,
right?
Honestly,
I mean,
but I get you.
Right, the greatest year they've ever had, they probably won't finish 20th. To me, the key is developing the guys who you do have, right? I mean, Arizona's always going to get kind of the kinds of players Arizona's always gotten, right? So the key is to bring in teachers, and even they've said this, I think, with Stan Agan, is, you know, Stan is a teacher first and foremost. And I think that, you know, some of that is just stuff you put in press releases, but I think it's good to hear. Especially because we all lived through, and Justin, you and I did at least, the Rich Rodriguez era where he's bringing in, you know, the 26-year-old guy from Fresno State who was going to recruit, you know, Greg Johnson and all those guys, and he stayed for a year. You know, they brought in guys like Yona Ugalele, who, you know, was supposed to deliver recruits and couldn't deliver recruits and then really wasn't really good with X's and O's either. Here, I think having teachers, especially in kind of a make or break season for them, I think that's the smart play.
And you also think too, they're so late in the game when it comes to recruiting that rather than investing in a rah-rah guy who can connect with these kids and get them to come to Arizona, why don't you get these guys who are teachers so you can get them to come in, look at the personnel you have available and coach them and get them ready for next year? Because it's not like Arizona is short of talent, because mm-hmm. during the offseason, leading in up to the season and training camp, all we heard about was the potential that this team has, especially on the defensive line. So I think with getting these guys to come in, coach them up and get them ready for next season, I think that's better than getting a solid recruiter.
Well, and let's be really clear. Even if they got a solid recruiter, the solid recruiter wouldn't start paying off for at least another year. Probably until the 2021 recruiting class.
But if they don't make a bowl game.
And guess what's going to happen if they don't make a bowl game?
Kevin Sumlin's going to be gone.
Everybody's going to be gone.
Yeah.
Everybody is going to be gone if they don't show improvement, right?
Yeah.
So I think that you've brought in guys who will help improve you in the short term. And maybe that's not the right play every year at every school, but I think that that's the right play with Arizona in 2020.
I think also that there's something to be said for the ability to recognize talent. And maybe see something in players that others don't see. I know for a fact that, you know, Paul Rhodes and Stan Agan have been spending the majority of the last 2 or 3 weeks or however long Egan's been here, like breaking down film of not only of the current players, but of potential, recruits who they could bring in. And they offered a couple of, outside linebackers. I think more offers are on the way. They obviously need to, invest more in the defensive side of the ball. But that's sort of the underrated part of recruiting. It's obviously relationships is the biggest thing, but I think, you know, being able to evaluate these players and see something, in them that others don't see that projects, you know, that projects into them exceeding whatever their star rating is at the moment.
So what does this, do for Arizona moving forward? Having these coaches in place, because last year Arizona was probably the worst defensive team in the Pac-12. A lot of, you know, talented players looked out of sorts. The communication aspect wasn't there. What does this do for Arizona moving forward? Alec, chime in.
I think what it's going to do is you're going to hopefully see a more clear identity on defense in terms of the scheme of this team, how they use the defensive line that they have, how they develop the defensive backs they have. Because I think the defensive backs aren't bad, but they need some coaching. They've got a lot of young players, you know, guys that are leaving, you know, that are seniors this offseason that have left. I think Arizona's going to run a 3-4 defense now. So I like that move. I think what you're going to see a lot more accountability. What I think these coaches will bring that are experienced, they know how to hold players accountable for mistakes on the field, and I think you'll see a more disciplined Arizona team.
And in tackling, too. We talk about the teaching part of it. Tackling has been a lost art because nobody wants to do it in practice, because why would you want to injure your players? Why would you want to bang up your players the week of a big game? You want them to be as healthy as possible. And I think now you're going to start to see maybe more tackling drills, something that they can work on moving forward, because tackling was a big part of why the defense struggled last year.
It was not just last year.
Or several years. I should say several years. 3 years.
It was the first thing that Paul Rhodes mentioned in his press conference. The very first thing he said was, we are going to practice tackling. We are going to emphasize tackling. And I think that a lot of defense is doing the little things right. It's getting lined up right. It's just executing your assignment, taking the right angle, making that tackle instead of allowing the ball carrier to get 5 or 6 extra yards. Like, I think you can scheme up a defense without having extraordinary talent and get, and create that situation where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
You know who's going to be thrilled about the tackling stuff? Kelly Presnell. Kelly Presnell is one of our photographers. He's probably our best sports photographer. And after pretty much every Arizona football game he shot the last 2 years, he goes to me, I don't know if he's talked to you guys about this, he goes, can't tackle. They can't tackle. And, you go, well, yeah, maybe, kind of, what do you know? Then you realize, oh, yeah, that's right. He is zooming in on literally every tackle attempt in every game. And, if they can start tackling better, I think that they can, by virtue of just sort of everybody developing 1 year, being 1 year older, and if they can shore up some of the fundamentals, there's no reason why they can't be a middle-of-the-pack defense in Paul Rhodes' first year. And if they're a middle-of-the-pack defense in Paul Rhodes' first year, I think they're a bowl team. I really do, because that offense is going to be there. You know they're going to score points.
I agree. I mean, I think there is a path to 6-6, which would be a 2-game improvement from last year and would at least represent progress for this team and would assure bowl eligibility for them. And we've talked about this a million times. Like, they don't have to be great on defense. They just need to be decent on defense. And they really haven't been that, with the exception of, that stretch of games in 2017, which, if you look back at them, a lot of those were pretty high scoring games. And a lot of that was Khalil Tate and the offense and putting the other offense into situations where they had to pass the ball, which leads to the turnovers that they haven't gotten the last couple of years.
What about the outlook for 2020, specifically on the defensive side of the ball? What jumps out to you when you look at the unit? Well, I guess we'll start with the defense, and then we'll segue into the offense. Lev?
Well,
speaking of identity, what can this identity be?
Well, I did this roster breakdown, which is on Tucson.com, and they have 73 scholarship players, and 3 of them are specialists, so that means 70 others. 39 offensive players, 31 defensive players. Not enough defensive players. Now, this includes the signees, the confirmed signees, not any commits or guys who were committed but didn't sign and are supposed to sign. They need to add more on the defensive side of the ball to establish that identity that you're talking about. I like the idea, as Alec mentioned, of moving to a 3-4 front. I think that they need, number one thing they need to do, accomplish on the field, is generate more consistent pass rush. And how do you do that? Well, I think they've got some talented players who need to be coached up, and that's what Andy Boo's job is going to be. He's going to coach the edge rushers specifically. And you can do it by scheme. I think they definitely need to get more creative when it comes to blitz packages. I mean, I think we've mentioned on the show in the past, like, how rarely they would blitz defensive backs under Marcel Yates. And I mean,
when you have a guy like Christian Roland Wallace available,
tell me Christian Roland Wallace like couldn't come off the edge and harass the quarterback. I mean, that was the blitz that killed the Arizona offense against Washington and USC. It was the slot, the guy coming off the slot. It seemed like they never could pick him up. There's only so much time to study football for these football players in college, right? I mean, I think, it's difficult for offensive linemen or even the best quarterbacks to pick up on every blitz that's coming their way. So I think schematically is another way that they could do it. I think that they're going to try to bring in more front seven players to add to the depth and talent level, because that's where it all starts. And that's, to me, that's what's been lacking. The lack of sacks, the lack of tackles for losses, not putting the opposing offense into compromising situations.
One thing that really jumped out to me during the holiday break was when I put together the all-decade U of A football team. And I wanted to get your guys' recommendations for the defensive line. Who are the best four guys to ever play on the defensive line in the 2010s? And Brooks Reed, Ricky Elmore, of course, mm-hmm. you know, two all Pac-10 guys. And then in the middle, Sione Tuilagamaka.
Yeah, he was good.
And PJ Johnson. But if those guys played for any other Pac-12 program, are they on their all-decade team?
How about this? Earl Mitchell. I mean, Earl Mitchell, and it's funny because all these guys.
But he wasn't in the 2010s.
Sure he was. Was he? Or was he 2009?
Ah, dang
it. Okay. To me, too, it's funny. In Arizona's current defense, both Ricky Elmore and Brooks Reed would have been outside linebackers.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they ran a 4-3. I think it's a little unfair because, you know, that 3-3-5 system or that they ran from really 2012 on.
Yeah.
It's not a defensive lineman's. It doesn't highlight the defensive line.
Sure.
Right. Your nose tackle is basically supposed to take up two guys and just be a big body. Your ends are, you know, not really pass rushing ends or not. It's not easy for them to be pass rushing ends. But yeah, I mean, that's probably it. I mean, PJ Johnson, God love PJ Johnson. I think if PJ Johnson's on this team in 2019, I think Arizona wins another game, maybe two.
Yeah.
But PJ Johnson wasn't here very long and wasn't great when he was here. And yet, of course, he's a no-brainer for the all-decade team.
Yeah.
But I think that shows you just kind of the dearth of talent that's been here during that last decade.
And that's a good point. But the one thing I was trying to say is, I mean, has there ever been a dominant defensive lineman recently at the University of Arizona, even under Kevin Sumlin, besides PJ Johnson?
No.
Yeah, those big NFL caliber defensive tackles are the hardest thing to find anywhere.
Right.
And most of them end up playing in the SEC or for Ohio State, or if they do come to the West Coast, to USC,
Oregon, Washington. Yeah.
Really, really hard to find those guys. So it's not surprising that you had a difficult time identifying the top defensive tackles of the decade for Arizona, because there just haven't been that many.
Yeah. But now with this guy in, Andy Boo, being the outside linebackers coach, maybe we can start to see that identity come back to where Arizona actually had a good pass rush and they actually had an identity, because they got him. They have, you know, guys like Jalen Harris. Kylan Wilborn was a freshman All-American, right?
He was.
What the hell happened to him?
I don't know.
But he's still available on the roster. They have the guys. Maybe now that these coaches are in and they could teach them, maybe now they could start to show.
When Andy Boo was coaching at Maryland in 2016, 2018, something like that, a couple years ago, his team, they put up 38 sacks. I'll find the story here. Okay, yeah. In 2016, that squad had 38 sacks. That's double what Arizona had this year. So if they can get to, you know, 24, 25, you know, get close to 30 sacks, that's a huge improvement.
And we're talking about Maryland.
Maryland. They went 5-7 in 2016.
Yeah.
And this is a conversation. This could easily be part of a basketball podcast too, but I'll say this for football. You can have a really good defense. You can have a really good college football defense without it being chocked full of NFL players, right? Arizona could be really good defensively next year, even though it doesn't have anybody really who projects to play on Sundays. It's a matter of being assignment sound. It's a matter of being smart. It's a matter of being aggressive, I think. You know, I think that we get so caught up in, are these guys NFL stars? Are these guys names that we can bring up, you know, when we're talking about an all-decade team? That we forget that, like, you know, most good defenses are just good because they're good. It's not because they have guys who are going to be superstars on Sundays. You know, during my time, at least covering Mike Stoops' Arizona Wildcats, I mean, two of the best defensive players, regardless of position, that I can remember covering were Spencer Larson and Tremaine Bondurant.
Yeah.
What'd they do? Cam Nelson was a 3-year starter at safety. What'd he do? Nate Ness was really good. He played maybe 2 years in the NFL. These guys were all really solid defensive players who came in rated just like the Colin Schoolers and Kylan Wilborns were, right? But they developed during their time at Arizona. They had coaches who turned them from three-star prospects to four-star players. Antoine Kaysen was a three-star guy. Trevin Wade was a two-star guy, right? They all carved out really nice college careers in Arizona's defense. I mean, it wasn't great, but it wasn't bad enough that everybody got fired, right? It was middle of the pack. And with Arizona, all you got to do is finish in the middle of the pack. And with their schedule and their ability to score points, they're going to have a winning season.
I don't know if this qualifies as irony or not. It probably does. But if you look at the Rich Rod era, they've had four players drafted, which is not great. Nothing to brag about since 2016. All defensive players.
Rich Rod never had an offensive player
not
drafted.
Not one single offensive player drafted. I guess if J.J. Taylor or Khalil Tate get picked, that you could sort of put those on Rich's resume as offensive players. But it's weird. Scooby Wright, Will Parks, Dane Cruikshank, and P.J. Johnson.
Right. And to be clear, it's no Rich Rod recruited players. Because Kadeem Carey played for Rich Rod. He got drafted.
Right.
But Mike Stoops recruited Kadeem Carey.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. That is...
Isn't that crazy?
That's really weird. That's the strangest stat I've heard today. That's wild.
All right.
But I think defensively, you will see an improved Arizona unit. And I don't think they really have a choice, because if they don't improve on that side of the ball, the entire staff is gone. I mean, I think that's pretty safe to say. But let's go over to the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
The Khalil Tate era is officially over at Arizona. So we assume that Grant Gunnell is taking over the reins as the starting quarterback. But then you look at other positions. Wide receiver is interesting. They have tons of guys they can rotate. Lev, you said in your roster breakdown, it's a very crowded room. You have Jamari Joyner. If you look at that ASU game this past year, I mean, he looked like an all Pac-12 wide receiver. Then you have, you know, guys like Jalen Johnson, Brian Castile, Jaden Mitchell, the list goes on and on.
Brendan Schooler.
Brendan Schooler.
Added to the mix.
Colin Schooler's brother.
Yep. Let me ask you this, Alec. Do you see a go-to guy in that group?
I mean, at the moment, it's got to be Jamari. But I think we could see a guy like Brian Castile maybe make that leap.
Man, I've been hearing that for 3 years now.
We have, yeah.
I mean, Brian Castile is used in a certain way where he's just not going to get a lot of downfield opportunities. Like, the average per catch is not going to be there. Yeah, I mean, Brendan Schooler, if you just look at the measurables, like, he projects to be that type of guy. He's bigger than his brother. He's faster than his brother. I think he can sort of, he's not as big as Sean Poindexter, but I think he can play that type of role. In this system, and he and Grant Gunnell already have been working with each other. I know that Grant Gunnell like pushed really hard for Brendan to come here. So to me, if you kind of stack up the receivers, I think Schooler and Joyner are at the top of that list. I think Castile isn't kind of the next notch down. And then there's those developmental young guys like Jalen Johnson, Booby Curry. You know, Jaden Mitchell, we heard a lot of good things about him in spring, but he never really got an opportunity. I mean, the slot position is like, there's a lot of guys there who are viable, including Tavian Cunningham, who's sort of the one guy in the team who's got that pure speed. Frank Brown, the guy who just committed to them from Houston, is kind of a hybrid player who might see as much time as a slot receiver as he does at running back.
Drew Dixon.
Yeah,
Stanley Berryhill.
It goes on and on, right? I think it was 14
yeah.
receivers. It's really difficult to assess the performance of the wide receivers, I think, from this last season, because there was so much uncertainty and upheaval at quarterback. And the guy who played the majority of the snaps at quarterback is not a pure passer, never has been. And so, you know, we're guy, you know, when you rewatch the game or you know, or you're watching on TV, you can't usually see what's happening in the secondary. So there might have been guys who were open who Khalil Tate didn't see, and Grant Gunnell would. And so it's possible that the same group of receivers will look better, you know, with a different quarterback and more cohesion on offense than they did this past year, when I think a lot of people just doubted whether there were any, you know, kind of alphas in that group.
So we're here talking about the wide receivers, and we'll probably talk about Grant Gunnell in a little bit here, but does Arizona's offensive identity now begin to change with Grant Gunnell and all these receivers, where the past 6 years, Rich Rod and now, you know, the first 2 years of Sumlin, it's been heavily run first, run dominant team. Maybe not so much the last 2 years, but especially with Rich Rod. I know, you know, with Sumlin and Mazzoni, they've tried to, you know, feed JJ and those guys in the backfield first, and, you know, get Khalil a run. But now with Gunnell, who's, you know, a more pro style quarterback, you've got all these receivers. Does Arizona become a team that tries to sling it all over the yard now?
Yeah, absolutely. Because they tried to be that team with Khalil Tate, and it didn't work. They never had any design run for Khalil Tate, much like a Rich Rod or a Rod Smith offense. And you just got this feeling, especially towards the end of this past season, that it was this slow breakup process to where they were just trying to get through the season in one piece and in peace. So I think now with Grant Gunnell as the full-time quarterback, the offense is not in this awkward stage anymore. It's all Noel Mazzoni, his playbook, and Grant Gunnell, because Grant Gunnell came here specifically for Noel Mazzoni's offense.
Right. Grant Gunnell is a point guard. Khalil Tate was a shooting guard. That's the comparison. Grant Gunnell's job is going to be to get the ball out of his hands as quickly as possible to the open man, right? Just like TJ McConnell's job was to do that when he played basketball here. Khalil Tate was a guy whose job it was to gain yards and make plays by whatever means necessary, right? Even if that meant being a high-volume shooter, if I can mix our sports metaphors here. I think that we're going to see better performances out of the receivers, like Lev said, and we're going to see better numbers simply because the quarterback knows what he's here to do, and that is catch ball, throw ball, right? Catch the snap, throw the ball. Khalil Tate, I'm not sure we ever figured out, and I'm not sure Arizona ever figured out sort of what Khalil's primary objective was, right? I mean, he wasn't going to be a drop back quarterback, but he kind of wasn't a running quarterback either at the end. Here, I think everybody knows what the goal is. I think here everybody's going to be pulling in the same direction more, and we'll see better results, at least from the receivers, because you know what kind of an offense Arizona's running. It's going to look a lot like Brock Osweiler at ASU,
yeah,
and a lot less like, you know, Anu Solomon under Rich Rodriguez.
Let's look at the UCLA game this past year, the one game that Grant Gunnell started and finished and played the entire way. He attempted 44 passes in that game. Do you know how many times Khalil Tate attempted 44 passes or more in a game?
Once.
And that was the Houston game.
That's right.
At Houston, where they were down by a gazillion points, like in the second quarter, and they had no choice but to pass. Right. So
he was hurt and he wouldn't run because he was hurt.
Right. Yeah. So the one time that Grant Gunnell played the whole game, they threw more passes than in all but one game that Khalil Tate ever played. So I think that gives you an indication, Alec, to your point, of what kind of offense they're going to be. And yes. They've got more wide receivers than anything else. They've got the quarterback who passed for the most yards in the history of Texas high school football. They're going to sling the ball all over the yard.
Right. This is going to be, and if you look at sort of the DNA of Arizona's offensive coaches, specifically Sumlin and Noel Mazzoni, you know, a lot of it comes from kind of that Mouse Davis wide open Hawaii football, right? Colt Brennan's been in the news again this week because Joe Burrow's breaking all of his touchdown records. This offense, I think, is going to look a lot like the offense Colt Brennan ran at Hawaii a decade ago, which is just deep shots downfield. And I think Grant Gunnell, I don't know if he has the pure arm strength to stretch the field, but I think that he's accurate enough that they can get big chunks of yardage right away.
You voted for Colt Brennan to win the Heisman.
Maybe I did. How do you know that? It was 2007. Go ahead.
How do you know that? You were like 10 years old.
No.
Literally.
I think one of my first days on the job, I went into Ryan's office and he had – was it your first Heisman ballot framed?
Yeah. Maybe I learned more and more about the Heisman process after that first year. I honestly thought Colt Brennan that year was the best player in America. He brought Hawaii to the Sugar Bowl. Okay. I mean, it says something.
Who ended up winning it that year?
I believe they got crushed. But oh no, who won the Heisman? Heisman?
Yeah.
Oh God.
2007?
I don't know.
That wasn't Tebow.
Was it 2007? Colt Brennan?
It wasn't.
It might have been Tebow. I think I voted Tebow second, so it was probably Tebow.
Or Ohio State player? Sam
Bradford? No, it's because I voted for Sam Bradford.
So you're saying it was 2007 when this happened?
Yes.
I think.
All right, I'll look it up while we're still talking here.
Okay, and we all voted for Joe Burrow, right?
Yes.
Lev?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a no-brainer.
Right, this was as easy a Heisman vote as I've ever had.
Yeah, 2007 was Tim Tebow, uh-huh. and Darren McFadden finished Darren McFadden. Second, and Colt Brennan was a distant third.
How many first-place votes?
He had 54 first place votes. He threw 17 interceptions that season. To put Joe Burrow's like insane season in perspective, like you talked about how awesome Colt Brennan was in 2007, 38 touchdowns and 17 interceptions. This year, Joe Burrow had 60 and 6.
Jeez.
Against the SEC. Now, the previous year, 2006, Colt Brennan threw 58 touchdown passes.
That was the year. That was the year in which I voted for him.
Wait, okay. All right. Now I got to check the 2006 Heisman voting. Okay.
It's a good pod, by the way.
He finished sixth that year.
Right.
The people who finished ahead of him, Troy Smith was the winner.
Yes.
Darren McFadden again finished second. Brady Quinn was third. And then Steve Slayton and Michael Hart, who was a running back for Michigan.
Rich Rod guy, Steve Slayton.
To show you, like, that shows you how much things have changed, I think, because running backs just don't get that much respect anymore. And when it comes to the Heisman voting, it's sort of like it's almost like the best quarterback in college football is going to win the Heisman with a handful of exceptions, right? Derrick Henry, I guess, was one of them. Christian McCaffrey was up there his last couple of years, but he was really kind of a multi-purpose player, not just a pure running back.
Here's our Arizona comparison. Joe Burrow, 60 passing touchdowns this year. Khalil Tate, 57 in his Arizona career.
Sheesh.
And historically, that's not a bad career. That's going to be viewed statistically as a perfectly fine career.
Isn't he third or fourth all time in touchdown passes
at
Arizona?
That's crazy. Man, that's a good stat. That is a
nice job, Alec. Joe Burrow, yeah. I mean, people have said that Joe Burrow had the best season that a quarterback has, best single season that a quarterback has ever had in college football. And you could definitely make that case. I think Cam Newton was the one that was cited previously by most people as kind of the best. And Joe Burrow took it to another level. They were something else. I don't think Grant Cannell is going to throw 60 touchdown passes next year. But if he threw 30, would you be surprised?
No, not at all. And I think a lot of those too, not just wide receivers, but running backs, I mean, Gary Brightwell is going to be your primary back. He's going to be the starter without a doubt. But this kind of transitions into our next position group, the running backs. Mm-hmm. You know, recently, you mentioned Frank Brown, a three-star running back from Houston. He commits to Arizona, and if he does sign, talk about another crowded room. Even with J.J. Taylor gone.
Yep.
You still have Gary Brightwell. You still have Nathan Tilford, who the fans love to see because he was a four-star guy.
Very effective every time he's played.
Yeah.
Frankly.
People have high expectations for Nathan Tilford, and he showed what he's capable of last year. More than just a big, powerful running back, he displayed some speed last year.
Great footwork, too. Michael Wiley. Bam Smith.
Bam Smith.
Jalen John coming in.
That's six running backs?
Yeah, it's a lot of dudes.
Usually – In a game, ideally,
use about three
or four.
Yeah.
So somebody's going to get their feelings hurt, or you're just going to constantly see these running backs churn out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that is a position where there are a lot of injuries. It's a position where you can use more than one. You can use two. And they did use that two-back set a decent amount this last year. I think that Brown and Wiley are players who can line up in the slot or even outside.
Wasn't Brightwell a slot receiver?
Brightwell
his first
was
year
a
too?
Slot receiver his first year.
Everybody's cross training. Yeah, except
I think Bam Smith is a pretty good receiver too. The one thing I'll say about Frank Brown, again, assuming that he does sign here, there's still a few weeks to go, and I think some other schools are going to come after him. But he has speed, breakaway speed that I don't think any of those other backs have. Maybe Gary Brightwell, Mr. 4340 himself can make that claim, but
really?
What?
Gary Brightwell runs a 4-3.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Gary speaking about himself in the third person. And hey, you know, I timed him on that long touchdown he had, and it was legit. He's a 4-3 guy. But I think Frank Brown might be a 4-3 guy too. And when you have that kind of speed, you know, that can really have an effect on a defense. You know, that's a weapon. And you know, all due respect to JJ Taylor, Nathan Tilford, Michael Wiley, Bam Smith. I don't think any of them are quite as fast as Frank Brown. There's more to football than just speed, but I think that's an element that this offense has been lacking a little bit the last couple of years.
But of course, all of that is pointless if you don't have anybody to protect you.
Spoken like a true offensive lineman, Justin Spears.
Got to give it up to the big
center
guys.
Center for Cienega.
Got to give it up to the big guys up front. Now, the unit is kind of taking a hit. You're missing out on Cody Creason, who's been your Iron Man, really, for the last few years until he was hurt recently. During the USC game when he got that leg injury?
I think it was the Washington game. By the way, I don't know if we ever gave him and Josh McCauley the credit that they deserve for playing through injuries, playing the entire game against Arizona State.
Wow.
I mean, Josh McCauley had an MCL sprain. I don't even know. I think that Cody Creason actually had a surgery. The I can't remember what it's called. It's the surgery that Tua Tagovailoa had for his ankle. Do you know what that's called? They call it like roping or threading or something. Anyway, I mean, he was in a boot like a week before and played the entire game. I mean, I think he basically just told the trainers, like, I'm going to play. Let's figure out how we can make this happen. So kudos to them. They are going to miss Cody Creason, but that's the only guy they lose. The only guy. You've got Donovan Lai entering his junior year with tons of starting experience. You've got Josh McCauley coming back at center. Jordan Morgan, very promising, talented young player that they love. I mean, to me, and maybe I'm in the minority on this, I think that's a really good foundation for the line. Let's say you put Jordan Morgan at left tackle. You put Donovan Lai at right tackle.
At left tackle?
Well, I think so. Based on his athleticism and footwork.
Okay. What's going to happen with guys like Edgar Barola, Peyton Fears, two guys
who were swapping playing time at
right tackle?
I think that Peyton Fears is going to move to guard in this scenario. I could be wrong. I mean, when Morgan played a little bit last year, they moved Lai to left guard. Maybe that's what they're going to do. And they'll keep Peyton Fears over at right tackle. But I think the best alignment for them is Lai at right tackle, which is the position he primarily played as a freshman, Morgan at left, McCauley at center, and kind of figure out the guards from there. And there are plenty of candidates for that, like Robert Congell, Peyton Fears, Bryson Kane. I don't think their offensive line is as big of a concern as a lot of people think it is. And I also think that having a quarterback who has a better, like, sort of instinct for the pocket will make the offensive line look better.
One lineman I'm excited to see this upcoming year, and I think he could actually get playing time as a freshman, Josh Baker from Missouri. Mm-hmm. I've heard nothing but great things about him. He's big. He's about like 270, 275, 6'3", but he's just rock solid. And Midwestern linemen, I mean, you can't go wrong with them. No, absolutely not.
Yeah, I think what I like about the direction they're headed in recruiting, and they have one more guy, Cedric Melton, who was committed to them, did not sign in December. There's some concern he could go elsewhere. There's some concern about his grades. They're looking into some other offensive linemen to add to the mix. I think they'd like to bring in at least one more, maybe two. They're getting close to that number, 15, which is the number that you want to have in your program. You play five at a time, right? So you kind of have three units, and the third unit ideally is kind of your developmental squad.
Sure.
And they have not been there in recent years, and that is an indictment on the previous coaching staff not mm-hmm. putting enough emphasis on what I consider to be the most critical position on mm-hmm. offense.
Especially if you're a school like Arizona that's not getting surefire first-round pick skill position players. I mean, you need to be solid on both lines, right? You need to be there. It's, yeah. I mean, I think it's somewhat unconscionable. And maybe it's a testament to the guys who do start and play. This team led the Pac-12 in rushing 2 years in a row with almost no depth. I mean, it's crazy.
So, sorry to interrupt you, Justin. One of the guys that they're looking at is Jake Griffin from Red Mountain Mesa, who is also looking at BYU. Kind of the biggest question with him is how badly does he want to go on a mission? How important is that to him? And if it's the most important thing, he's probably going to go to BYU. If it's not, I think he might end up here. Really impressive film. He's only 265, but he's 6'6", and he moves really well. Another guy that they're looking at, and I just had to bring this up on the podcast because I know Ryan's going to be very entertained by this, and this is his real name. His name is Leif Magnusson, and he's from Canada.
Love it. Love it. Is he like an actual Viking?
He's possibly a character in Frozen. I don't know. But I just love the idea of bringing in Leif Magnusson from Saskatchewan, where I believe is where he's from. Oh. Kyle Devan is going to go, I think, visit him this weekend.
Greg Hansen would write an epic poem about a guy named Leif Magnusson if he ever did anything at the U of A. It'd be great.
And his little picture on Twitter is him like standing like with snow in the background, like a snowy like forest behind him, and he looks like a Yeti. rugged young man.
Yeti.
Leif Magnusson.
Amazing. Putting it on people's radar.
I'm guessing does he wear the flannel shirt underneath his pads? Is that how that goes?
Probably. He probably wouldn't need it though.
Do they wear kilts?
Leif Magnusson's going short sleeves, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
How cold it is.
Pullman in November, he'll go short sleeves.
No problem. Yeah. But in all seriousness, like the appeal for Canadian players, which is kind of a relatively untapped market, is to come to a place like Arizona where the weather is warm, you know? So and we'll see what happens there.
Eh? we talk about Leif Magnusson. That's one hell of a name. I can't get that out of my head. That's like the name of the day.
Well, some of the other offers he has, Boston College, Syracuse, you're not going to get the weather in those places that you're going to get down here. So Leif.
Leaf in Tucson.
A leaf.
moving ahead, now that we're in 2020, we are in January, of course, you know, spring ball conversations probably going to come up here over the next month and a half or so. Where does Arizona stand heading into Pac-12 next season? Out of all the Pac-12 teams, do you see Arizona as a team that could compete in the South? Do you see it? I mean, I'm doing is asking questions.
You were wrinkling your nose, Michael Lapp. I
felt like I was going to sneeze.
Yeah. Can you compete for a Pac-12 South title? No, probably not.
No.
Can you have a winning season and avoid regime change? Yeah. I mean, again, it's, their non-conference schedule doesn't scare me. Does it scare you who they play again?
Hawaii at home.
Right.
Portland State. Yeah, at Portland. Home, so, and then at Texas Tech. So they should, in theory, be able to go 2-1.
Right. So they'll go let's say they go 2-1. I mean, no, the problem to me is sort of the middle of the Pac-12 or Pac-12 South. ASU is trending up. I mean, they have one of America's, 10 best recruiting classes coming in. Herm Edwards has an extension. They have a quarterback in Jaden Daniels that should only get better. As a sophomore, a place like Colorado, I think, is being seen as on the rise. They've had a good recruiting class, taking Jason Harris away from Arizona, among other things. Whereas this year, I think all you really had to do was leapfrog like Utah and maybe USC. Next year, I think every Pac-12 South game is going to be an absolute scramble. And, you know, we ask ourselves today in January, who in the Pac-12 South could Arizona beat next year?
UCLA,
maybe Colorado, maybe.
Yeah.
And then everything else. Okay.
Let's slow the roll on ASU a little bit here. Okay. Uh-huh. I know there's been a lot of positive publicity. Okay. They've definitely recruited better than Arizona, but Arizona was competitive with them each of the last 2 years, should have beaten them 2 years ago. Was kind of right there with them this past year. Turned the ball at what? through three interceptions. They lose several, I think, their offensive line was not that good. They lose Eno Benjamin. They lose Brandon Ayuk. Let's see. They have got a lot of inexperienced coaches that they're bringing in, kind of gone in the opposite direction of what Arizona's done. So, you know, I think they're going to get some top 25 love.
They do have
heading into next year.
They do have
year.
Some pretty big wins too.
They have a really promising young quarterback. But I mean, to say that game's not winnable, that's a winnable game every year, and I think it will be again. I think there's a path to what Ryan said. You know, 500 ish, maybe a little bit better, making a bowl game, but competing for the Pac-12 South, no.
Their schedule's not terrible. They're going to have Oregon at home. They're going to have Stanford at home. They're going to have USC at home. Your road games are at Oregon State, at UCLA, and then obviously you got at Utah, at Washington, which are going to be really difficult. But a path to 6-6 is definitely there if they start out strong in non-conference. 6-6 is feasible.
And Washington, too, I mean, they really kind of dropped off last year.
Right.
And they're losing a bunch of talent to the NFL. So can we look at a Washington team having another down year? I say down year as, you know, going 6-6 or 7-5 with a first year head coach in Jimmy Lake.
Maybe. And it's funny. You say that their schedule kind of lines up. I would go the other way. I think if I'm Arizona, I would rather place teams like Oregon and USC. I think I'd rather go on the road because you're probably not going to win those games, right? These toss up games, Oregon State to me is a toss up game at this point. The way Oregon State has improved. Right? I mean, those are the teams you want to play here, right? You want to play teams where maybe a home field advantage gives you a win. Those are the teams that I think you'd like to play here as opposed to going on the road.
So, okay. We mentioned UCLA as being vulnerable. They improved toward the end of the season, but they also lost they've lost like 13 guys or something to the transfer portal. So has Stanford. It's been a really weird offseason for what's been maybe like the most stable program, in the conference. I thought they were vulnerable last year. Arizona just happened to play them on the day, like the one game all season that KJ Costello was healthy. They're vulnerable to me. Who's the favorite in the Pac-12 South next year? You'd probably say USC based on talent, but they also have a lame duck coach and a lot of negativity around the program. There's a temptation to say Utah, but they had a ton of seniors. On this team, they've got to replace their running back, their quarterback, a bunch of their really good defensive players.
I bet it's ASU. I bet
ASU.
I bet ASU gets picked to win the South by virtue of they lose fewer players than USC and Utah do.
But one thing I love about Utah, and I know we've said this many times on the podcast, even if they have to replace skill players, it just kind of seems like they've been consistent all along. Why? Because they build from the inside out. They focus on the defensive line. They focus on the offensive line. And I've even said this on the radio show when we were talking recruiting. When was the last time, or when has you heard any time somebody say, wow, Utah's recruiting class is stellar. They have all these four-star guys coming in. They have this skill player. They have this quarterback coming in. Nobody ever talks about Utah's recruiting class. But one thing they've always done since joining the conference is they get offensive linemen, they get defensive linemen. So no matter who is playing quarterback or who is playing running back, they find a way to be consistent. So if I had to say anybody is a favorite in the Pac-12 South, I'm going to go with probably the most consistent team, and that's Utah.
They have the highest floor of anybody because they have a system. And the things that they value have carryover from year to year. Line play, special teams. Like you said, and they also have a transfer quarterback coming in from South Carolina, right? I'm going to look. I think his name is Jake Bentley. Is
okay.
That correct? So a bit of a different look there for them at that position. But you can't discount Utah for sure. Arizona does not play Washington State next year. Is that correct?
Yes. We won't get to see Nick Rolovich.
We'll not get to see Nick Rolovich, who, Ryan, I'm sure you are the most qualified person to comment on this as sort of the authority on
Hawaii
Mountain
Athletics.
West Conference
Mountain West football.
Football.
Right.
How is Nick Rolovich not the perfect fit?
He's a great
for
fit.
Washington State.
He's all the weirdness that Mike Leach. He's just as weird as Mike Leach, I think, with less drama and trouble around him. I think that he's a guy. And again, I mean, he's only been the head coach at Hawaii, so we won't know for sure. But this is a guy who finds different ways to beat you. I mean, it's funny. I watched Hawaii twice this year. I watched them in their season opener against Arizona. I watched them in, I think it was the last game of the regular season for them against San Diego State. And they beat Arizona one way, and they beat the Aztecs a completely different way. They were able to change their scheme to match their opponent and win both ways. And to me, that is the hallmark of good coaching. To me, that's a really good hire for Washington State. And if you're a Washington State fan, you might have woken up this morning happier with the direction of your program than you were when Mike Leach was there, which is kind of surprising because everybody pretty much can agree that Mike Leach is a good coach. You've gotten a guy now, I think, who is quirky, just like Mike Leach was, but doesn't call his players fat and entitled in press conferences. And I think if you're a player at Washington State, you're probably pretty excited to run this, you know, to run Nick Rolovich's offense without the repercussions that come with playing for Mike Leach.
Yeah, it's not the air raid, but it's the run and shoot. And so you can pretty much plug and play the personnel that you have to sort of bring it all full circle here. The impact of that move for Arizona is that there's going to be a new coach at Hawaii. And that's who the Wildcats opened the season against. I think it's on August 29th. So it'll be interesting to see who gets tapped for that job and what type of system they run. Arizona obviously had major issues with the run and shoot. This last year was sort of the beginning of the end for Marcel Yates and the defensive staff, the way that that game went. So we will see a different defensive scheme for Arizona heading into that game, and most likely a different offensive scheme for Hawaii under a new coach.
So to recap this entire podcast, we broke down Arizona's roster, talked some recruiting, Leif Magnusson. We discussed Colt Brennan being voted as a Heisman winner by Ryan Rolovich, Hawaii.
We somehow didn't get to our podcast topic of the Instant Pot and all the delicious recipes you can make. But maybe next time.
Right. We've not talked about Frank Selfo getting an extension at Southeastern Louisiana. We've not talked about that through 2024. Frank, you don't know him. Good guy. Nick Foles is offensive coordinator.
Oh, that's right. Anyway. That's right.
Good times. Lots going on.
Lots going on. What's next in Pac-12 football or UA football?
The schedule, I thought it was supposed to come out today. Yeah. I thought maybe it would come out while we were recording this. It hasn't happened yet. But that's kind of the next big thing. And then spring practice is scheduled to start on March 2nd. So it's not too far off.
Not too far away. That'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast podcast. Make sure you download the Wildcaster app. It's available on the App Store and Google Play. You don't need a subscription to the Arizona Daily Star. It's free and it's at your fingertips. Make sure you download it. Also, subscribe to the Wildcast podcast. Subscribe, rate, review, share with all your friends. For Lev, for Alec, for Ryan, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening. We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.